Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the leadership track session this year at the CCV Conference and Convention. Let me tell you what's going to happen today. We're going to cover three topics, and it's going to be very much a discussion format, so everybody will be able to share ideas with each other. The first topic we're going to talk about is our leadership toolbox. The second thing we're going to talk about is dealing with paperwork. And we're going to have a guest speaker to come in to talk about that, Vita Zavali, who is the treasurer of 4 Affiliates. And then we're going to have some time to talk about dealing with personality challenges that we deal with in our chapters. So let me tell you what inspired me with the idea of the leadership toolbox was that I'm kind of a pack rat on my computer. I tend to, when I get emails, the ones that I like, I save them and I put them in folders. And over the years, I've collected a lot of interesting things, especially about, you know, a lot of things. But from time to time, I've collected some great leadership information. Like a few years back, ACB, the American Council of the Blind, for anybody that wasn't familiar with that acronym, did a couple of really useful handbooks that they posted on their website. One was a public service announcement handbook, and another one was a press release handbook that explained how to do, whether it was a PSA or a press release, and what the format is, how to get it out into the public. And that was really useful. I found that useful. A couple of years ago, I attended the Leadership Institute that they do some from time to time at the ACB conference. And it was a day-long session where we had different speakers and handouts and things. And I saved a lot of that. And years before, they have had some other regional leadership seminars where I've been able to get some information. And I really appreciate having that information. And I thought that a lot of people would appreciate it because I know that most of us, especially at the chapter level, when we're brought in, you know, we don't have master's degree in public administration or in nonprofit management. We're just folks who get involved with a group because we can't have common interests. And then we see a situation where people decide that we need to be in a leadership position and we don't have training. You know, we haven't been a president of a group before. We haven't been a secretary of a group before. And we just sort of do the best we can with what we know. And we're all out there sort of trying to reinvent the wheel. So I thought, you know, rather than everybody having to go out and find information where they can, let's get it together so that we can all be on the same page and have all the same access to information. The other thing that happens is you get turnover in groups, right? You know, you're the president for a few years, you learn a few things, and maybe you move. And the next person that's elected, you know, doesn't always get that information. So this toolbox is also going to be designed so that it will help you know what to hand off to your successors. In fact, what it's going to be is it's going to be like files on a thumb drive. And I'm going to include folders on there for saving information, like saving minutes and saving treasurer's reports and maybe saving instructions on different aspects of different positions in your chapter. Whether it's what does a president do, what does a vice president do, what does a board member do. And my plan is that I'm going to keep building this thing every year. So that every year from now on, my plan is that when we do our leadership track here at the convention, and I plan to do this as long as people let me, I will be ready to release the new annual release of the leadership toolkit. So that leadership toolbox, so that everybody will have up-to-date information and we'll add to it from year to year. And so my goal is to make that available to all of you so that you all have those resources and you don't have to waste time hunting for stuff. And what I would like to do is I would like to get your feedback on what are some documents or some tutorials that you could really use in your work as a leader in your group, in your chapter. And let's walk around and talk about that.
What are some things that you could use if in the
leadership toolbox, what tool would you like to find in there that you don't have now?
I think we can always use tools.
Can you make
sure the folks are online?
Yep, there's the mic.
Okay, oh, whoops.
Sorry about that.
And some mics you have to eat.
Yes.
I think we can always use tools on, public relations and presenting your chapter, just kind of like some ideas of getting out there in the community, because a lot of times some of this stuff takes care of itself. If you're out there and you're known, it'll be a lot easier for fundraising and everything else. So I think that's what I would like, is some ideas, just some practical ideas that chapters have done to get themselves in the community and to be out there in the world. Because, yeah, visibility.
Hey, did I hear Phil? Okay, Phil. Are you right over here? Okay. There we go.
Okay. I think information on techniques for writing minutes, for taking minutes. I know myself, I overdo it. I end up writing transcripts, not minutes. And yet I've seen the other way where people don't, you know, they're not complete, and they're too brief and don't really give information. So I think what I would like to see is, you know, some guidelines on what is really needed in minutes. Thank you.
I don't know if it's necessarily leadership, but like, for example, in all the legislative stuff that we're supposed to do, you know, we get a legislative report and then we have to really synthesize that stuff down. I'd like to see, I'd like to see something really concise come down from the head office that would say, you know what, if you're in this district, call this number and tell them this thing. If you're in that district, call that number and tell them this thing. These are the talking points he wants you to hit. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And really have some real direction on how the organization wants us to lobby for things, who we need to call, and what we can do as individuals. Also, how we could orchestrate for our chapter a letter writing campaign or this or that. You know, maybe it's just a little, it's like, okay, you guys are going to need envelopes. You guys are going to need this. You're going to need that. This is what you can do. This is how it has worked in the past.
Like a cookbook.
Like a cookbook for getting some advocacy done.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay. This is
Sarah. All right. Sarah Harris from Fresno. Excuse me. I think it would be great to have maybe some board expectations of, you know, who does what with roles. And just to kind of add on with what Kelly said, is maybe some ideas for committees that, you know, are important, and maybe how often they should meet, you know, that those kind of things. But definitely board expectations, I think, would be a good thing, you know, because sometimes not everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to do or what they should be trying to do.
Here you go, Frank.
Excellent. Who else has? Okay, Alice. Yes. Here we go.
Kelly, I want to really thank you about that advocacy. That was also my idea. You know, we have a pretty significant size chapter, and our chapter will do things with direction. So if there is information that comes through for, you know, how to contact your legislator, what are the things that you can do? You know, I think Mitch does some really good reports, but I also think that we need to break that information down in such a way so that all of our members really understand it. and more information that goes out from the government affairs group by email to everyone, not just within the government affairs committee. So something that goes out to chapters from the government affairs group. Normal people language. Yes.
Yeah. So you see that. You see. Yeah. Exactly. So you want it distilled down to action items. Yes. Yes. Were they? Yes. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. You know, one area where I found that they do a good job is the American Foundation for the Blind has a, and I'm forgetting what they call it, but it's basically their legislative report. And they give announcements. I think it's called AFB Connect, I think it's called. And for example, this coming Thursday, they're having something called the Call-In Day for the Ann Sullivan Macy Cogswell Act. And they in the email they sent out, they actually gave you a toll-free number you call that you can use to connect directly with your representative and senators based on your zip code. So, yeah, so it's pretty much just says, call this number, say this, and there you go. That's I think that's exactly what you're saying that you need. Yes, Sarah?
No, other things for the toolbox.
All right, so one thing that we do at my local blind center, I'm on the board there as well, is we do an event sheet. And what this event sheet does is when you do an event, you put down all the little pieces, you know, like how many people did it take, how much money did you spend, how much money did you make, and so forth. And so when you're done, you can go back and look at it and figure out exactly if it was worth doing again. And I know that's been really helpful there at our center. And so, you know, I've been trying to implement that in our chapter as well. So, I don't know, just thought of it.
And excellent. And in fact, if you have a sample, I would love to get the sample that I could use maybe as a template for people that are doing that. And over here on the other side. Okay, and Margaret. Okay, here, I'm reaching over to Margaret. Here you are, Margaret.
Getting warmer.
One more.
Here I go. Thank you.
This is Margaret Buckman-Garcia from Merced, Yosemite Gateway Council of the Blind. I'm thinking even more basic in this toolkit because as I passed on the baton to somebody new, I tried to tell her all the different things that I could think of that she needs to do and be aware of with CCB and stuff. So I think we even can use something that's very basic of what's required as a chapter, you know, not you've got your bylaws and constitution, but then what's next? Meetings, keeping agendas, keeping minutes. I know when we got the first thing, financial report. Oh my God, I didn't know I was going to have to break it down the way it was and things like that. So I think even to take it one step back a little bit, you know, even my first conventions, I had no clue. I don't think I went to credentials. Because I didn't know I was supposed to go to credentials, you know. So things, and, you know, nominating committee, where is that? What is it? And so just even something that starts that basic and then with links that explain things and keep going from there, like advocacy and legislative and things.
Mm-hmm. Right. And my goal is that we'll have something so that if you get elected to an office, somebody will be able to give you a thumb drive or a link so that you can just follow it and get this treasure trove of information immediately.
Okay. Who's this? This is Christine Bailey. Like I was talking to you before about delegates and what delegates and alternates do in the convention and where they need to go. Because last, Wood in the Hills was my first one.
Yes.
Okay. And I had issues because our chapter had very bad issues. Very bad issues. Yes. And I'm still bringing it up from the top. Mm-hmm. Because our last delegate, she decided... There, and I talked to the delegates at Woodland Hills, too, some of the delegates around here. I said, oh, dude, by the way, do you guys keep your receipts? No. This is our money. We spend it wherever we want. I said, this is a business, and this is how you're supposed to keep receipts for everything you spent in this convention that your chapter gives you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but people don't, where's it written in CCB that what a delegate and an alternate does during convention?
This is Tanya. I have the mic now. I do like some of the ideas, like the basic. Basics on. I like the ideas of the basics of what each role and what's expected in your chapter and what's expected from the chapter to the state level. And so, like I was telling you before, if we don't know what the expectations are, we will meet them all. If we know nothing, we will meet that because we will give you nothing. And then it ends up that they aren't participating. Well, maybe it's because they have a leader who doesn't know. My first convention was Woodland Hills, and we were lost half the time. We were just following the crowd because we didn't know about, it was both of our first conventions, so... It was really, really basic, but if we knew, if we had links to follow to maybe do some research before we got there, we would have actually know something. So I think that what you're doing is great, and it'd be great for everyone to continue to add to it. Yes.
Hold on, Kelly. I'm coming back over. Okay, here I come.
One thing that I would note is that a lot of that specific chapter stuff should be in your constitution and bylaws. And so it's always a good idea from time to time to read those and to have a constitution committee and sort of it should be.
Yeah. But we will include that in that kind of information though. And I probably won't get all of this stuff in the first go round on it, but I'll be building it. And one thing I'm going to try to fill it with over time is samples and templates. You know, so that like a sample constitution, sample bylaws, sample press releases, sample whatever we find that's going to be useful to your organization to have samples, so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel on things. Absolutely, and there is a resource section on the website. So I think everything we get together, that we'll try to mirror it. Is there somebody? Oh, hello, Vita. Okay, we're going to take a break from this particular discussion. We won't do it quite yet. So somebody else had a comment? Yes.
Hey. All right, everybody. So I, in November of last year, I attended what's called the Community Leadership Academy. I don't know if anyone's heard of it. It's put on by independent living centers. So like locally, it's our RICV, Resource for Independent Central Valley. And what this does is it's, at the end, you are certified to be a board member, be on an advisory committee and this and that. One of the tools that we had in there was, of course, a handbook. And within this handbook, it gave examples of Robert's Rules of Order, like, you know, what happens when a motion is made, when then there's a second, then there's open discussion. And I think that that's, I know within my chapter, that's sometimes a problem, because there's the flow doesn't always go correctly. And sometimes that's how we tend to get off topic. So I think if maybe we included, maybe just a short scenario, something pretty simple, just to give, a little piece of that would help a lot of people.
There you go.
Great.
I can send you that one too.
Yes. And by the way, I would love it if each of you were to, look at your hard drive at home or in your email inbox, and if you see that there's a document there that you think you'd like to share that relates to chapter organization, chapter leadership, good advice, whatever it is that would be relevant, I'd love you to send those to me so that I can include them. That would be great. So if you've gotten any copies of handouts that you've picked up at things like that, the seminar, that would be great to share. Exactly. Whatever you've got, that would be great.
Are you ready, Vita?
Okay. And I'll start an introduction. Vita Zavali she's currently the treasurer of the San Francisco chapter of CCB and of Guide Dog Users of California and of California Library Users of America and of Contra Costa chapter. So she has a huge amount of experience with the nuts and bolts of being a treasurer. But what that's relevant today is that in recent years, the CCB office has tightened up its requirements for things that it expects to receive from chapters, various documents that need to be done at various times. And we know that that has been a challenge for a lot of people, that it's different, it's new, it's not always intuitive. And so we wanted to take this opportunity today to go over what are those paperwork requirements that each of us as chapter leaders are responsible for in order to be in good standing with CCB and to fulfill our obligations as an affiliate organization. And because Vita is an expert on those things from experience, I have the privilege of having Vita here to share with you her knowledge about the important paperwork that we have to deal with in our chapters. So are you ready? Okay. What do we have, about a dozen people here, something like that? About that, yeah.
Okay, hi. In preparation for this, I called Ed in the office and I said, Ed, what forms do you get the most questions about? Because poor Ed is on the phone all day with people. He mentioned three forms to me. One is the officer information sheet. The other one is the credentials form. And the third one, which I believe was the most difficult, was the fundraising report at the end of the year. Do we have any treasurers in this room? Oh, one, two, okay. But even if you're not treasurer, especially if you're a board member, it's always handy to assist people with this process. And it just hit me that it's going to be hard for me to use the computer and the microphone. Do you have a stand? Oh, you want to hold it? Okay. Sorry. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, we should have thought of a stand. Okay. Number one, very important always. Put your hand up. Read the directions at the top of the form. I know it sounds funny, but this is really true. I think what happens, especially for those of us who complete the forms every year, we think, oh, we know that. I know that. I know that. But it may have changed, or some additional information may have been provided that could be of use to you in completing the form. Always read the directions at the top.
again, even if you read it before. The fundraising form, I'm going to start with that because that seems to be the most difficult one. And I am in the process of changing this form with Peter because it really is confusing. It has the simple questions of, you know, who is your president? Who is completing the form? Those are the basic questions. When it gets difficult is when you get down to what are the activities? What were the proceeds? What were the expenses? What were the sales taxes? And the way the form is set up right now in this column format, it's not in a table. Well, it's in a table if you could see it. Let's put it that way. What I tend to do is I fill this out in Excel. I use a spreadsheet and I send in my spreadsheet too, because it really helps me to keep the numbers straight. So I have set up a little spreadsheet and I'm very, very happy to send this to your chapter. The first thing is activity. The second item is gross proceeds. The next one is purchase costs. So those are the expenses without taxes. That's important. And then what was the sales tax if you paid taxes on an item? And then I have the net. So then that's, you know, the gross minus the expenses. Yes. And that's what my spreadsheet says. So for example, if you did a dinner, you did dinners, and let's say you spent $700 on the dinner, you spent $343, figure out how much of that was tax. You have to take the tax out. That's really important. Then put the tax in the next section, sales tax, and then, of course, you're going to get the net at the end. And you just do this all the way down your sheet, raffles, candy sales, bags, whatever you may have done. This requires work on the treasurer's part. I have several sheets that I keep throughout the year to make sure that I get all my information. I have a ledger. The ledger gives me day-to-day information. So if Frank handed me dues today, I would write $15 in dues. And again, this is a spreadsheet, and I'd be very happy to send it to you. If someone gave me a donation, anything day-to-day, and it can be small. For example, at one meeting at the San Francisco chapter, we do our grant every year, and people just gave me change. I said, okay, give me all the change in your pocket, and they handed me change. So I wrote $2.45 in my ledger. And what category that goes under. If you keep this on a daily basis all year, you'll find that it's much easier to fill out this report at the end of the year. And collect your receipts, of course, because CCB, since we use their 501c3, although there are some of you who use your own, does have the right to audit. And because they get audited, and they may have questions for you. So definitely keep your receipts and keep your records straight. Any questions about a ledger, about fundraising report? Yes, yeah.
When you say gross, do you mean gross that you took in or gross that you paid out? Like if we and dinners are kind of confusing to me with filling out this form because we've always called it a donation that people give us because I understand that you don't have to pay charge tax on it, if I correct on that. Yeah. But
So the question is what is meant by gross?
Gross.
Are you talking about that tax or the tax that
No, the tax is what you pay when you go to the store and you pay sales tax. Oh, in a dinner, let's say we do a dinner, it's a fundraiser, and we're charging $10 a person. Okay, that's not a donation. That is, that's part of your gross, that's what you took in. So if 30 people came, you have $300 in ticket sales. And then if you did anything in the fundraiser, let's say you sold raffle tickets. Now, that could be a separate category. Actually, raffles, I would think you could put into a separate category because it does have raffles here. Let's say you did an auction and you collected money from that auction at the dinner. All of that is still part of the proceeds, what you collected. Then the expenses are everything you bought. So you bought pizza, you bought wine, you bought beer. I don't know, at our functions, we always have wine and beer. So all of that is expenses. But when you look at the receipt, you may have tax. Now, the pizza is not going to have tax because it's food. But the wine, you're going to have tax on, right? So, yeah. Plates, cups, all of that is part of the expenses. Sometimes when I look at the expenses, I'm amazed at how much it costs to actually put the fundraiser on when we were trying to make money, right? So you're only making, but all of that is important to put in and to keep your receipts. Does that help? Mm-hmm. The net would be your proceeds minus the expenses. Yeah, the tax, the sales tax is in a separate area. That's what they ask for. There are five. I can be very happy to send you the spreadsheet. Yeah, you can email me vzavali@gmail.com. Do you need? Yeah. V as in Violet, and the last name is Z as in Zebra, A, V as in Violet, OLI@gmail.com. And I'm sure my name's in the program somewhere, so you can find it's vzavali@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. No, that's donated. That's not proceeds. Right. There was no payment involved there. And they do not ask on this sheet if you've received any donations. In-kind donations, correct. That's the right word. Yeah. Questions? Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, the formula is on the net. There is a yes. 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 Mm-hmm. Yes, we did do that 1 year with the convention forms. I don't know how many of you actually fill out. There are a number of convention forms, and they were in PDF format, and you could just tab to the next item and fill in. I'm not responsible for doing the forms, but what you should do, like I do, is call the office and say, this form is confusing. I have said that to Peter numerous times now that we are finally going to get together and fix this fundraising report. Really, truthfully, for a blind person, it would be much easier if you just had a line-by-line activity, you fill in colon, put fill in the activity. Next line, gross proceeds, put in the proceeds. Next line, you know, very simple to the point. The reason I did the Excel spreadsheet for me is because I have all of my ledgers in Excel. When I do a fundraising report to my chapter, like I will do for the booth, that's always in Excel. I just, for me, I can calculate better in Excel. So that's just the way I've chosen to deal with it. But I agree that it is not the answer in the end, because not everyone knows how to use a spreadsheet either. Right. Correct. 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 Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, how many years ago was that? Yeah, I would try it again now. I think Excel will be accepted now. Truthfully, it gives them all the information they need right there in one place. It's the formula, does all the work. So I have not had any trouble with turning it in Excel. So, Phil, just tell Peter I said so. Okay. You fill in the form. If they think you owe them the tax money, Peter will let you know. I don't know what in which items the sales tax is collected for and which they're not collected for. So I don't have an answer for that. But I do know that you will be contacted. So what they want you to do is fill in the information on the form. Charging sales tax for do you charge sales tax? You mean like for tickets, for okay. Right, yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know how he figures that out. Is it based on where your chapter meets? Or is it, is it based on where you were when you sold it? Like if you sold it in San Diego? Yeah, this unfortunately, that's a question I can't answer. I just fill in the form, and and Peter has to figure that out. Well, you know, the best thing to do is if you're going to owe sales tax, you charge a little more for the item. It doesn't have to be exact, right? You don't need to find out that in this county it's 8% tax. And then figure out, okay, the t-shirts are $15, what's 8% of that, you know. I don't think it needs to be exact. You charge $17, and then if at the end of the year you owe sales tax and he contacts you, you just send in that check. Yeah, you got it covered.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, this is a really important question for Peter, actually, because a lot of people do sell at the convention. And how that's figured out, I truthfully do not know. I don't know how you're supposed to send in the sales tax at the end of the year. Because I have not received a request to send in sales tax. And maybe that's what's done.
I'll ask Peter about that and get a better answer.
That's definitely a Peter question. I'm sorry, I veered off. Oh, no, actually, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it's something we all need to know. It's very important. Just filling in the form doesn't mean that much. I mean, I do fill in the numbers, and I expect that the treasurer will tell me what the next step is, right? So we need the treasurer to tell us what the next step is. Okay. Any other questions about the form? At the end of the year, your chapter or affiliate needs to fill in a fundraising form. Now, this is even if you have not collected any money. It's still, yeah, exactly. You put zeros down. They still need to have this for auditing purposes. Oh, no, we don't use numbers. What do they use? The 2015 fundraising report. Yeah, it's you know what? Yeah. That's a good point. Who said that, Kelly? Yeah, Kelly made a good point that they made some changes to the Constitution. And I wonder if the fundraising report is going to be part of that. Although it didn't say that. It said credentialing forms. And this is not a credentialing form. So I don't think so. But I've seen it. It depends on when it comes out. Then sometimes it's due by January 4th or it's due by January 10th. So the date does change on it. Again, this is where you have to read the instructions at the top of the form because it really does change every year. And the interesting thing I find is that sometimes all that's changed is the date. You know, this is the date it's due. But that, to me, is enough information, you know, important information I need to know. So I always read, you know, just carefully read. Yeah, of course. Right. Mm-hmm. I think maybe a recommendation that we can make is that either all the forms can come out one time a year, you know, so that you get a packet with all the forms, or you get an email with all the forms attached. And, you know, that's the precious email that you need to hold on to. Another option, I think, is to put the forms on the website, and you can download them when you need them. Maybe on the website at some point, hopefully in the near future, although the near future has kind of come and gone, we're supposed to be able to fill out these forms online. But that has not come yet, because extra security is involved there. We need to put, you know, SSO and all that. It needs to go behind a username and password and all that. So that, right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really good idea, Frank, to bring to the office. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe in the toolkit we should have a calendar.
Yes.
Okay. A chapter and affiliate calendar. January and December, yeah. Right. Yes, I agree. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Exactly. I agree. Okay. Wow. We have a lot of work for the office to do. Okay. Yeah, the convention forms are a little difficult to complete. Right, exactly. And so if the forms are made easier for people to complete, they'll do it on their own. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Does anyone have questions? Unfortunately, I overbooked myself, so I'm going.
Vivian, when you hear us talking about the toolkit is something that's going to be coming out very soon, which is a set of documents and for chapter leaders, so that we can have information for those of us who need to be chapter leaders. And that's it's a toolbox. So when you hear about the toolbox, that's what we're talking about.
And as part of that, we want a calendar.
Yes.
The officer information sheet is pretty straightforward. Name, address, phone, email, pretty straightforward. It does say what is the phone number and email address you want for the website. And it is important to note that may be different than what you have on the form for the person. I mean, maybe the person doesn't want their phone number on the website, right? Or, you know, as long as they have some way of being contacted. So it does need to be something, and usually an email address is good. Your chapter can also have an email address. Okay, let me go down here. You know, for example, you want to put your email address so Ed can contact you, or the office can contact you directly. But the email address you want to put on the website may be a chapter email address. I would
I'm all in favor for a chapter email address. Okay. And then at the bottom, and this is a little bit of a confusion, I think, there's two lists. There's a membership list and a president's list that CCB keeps. And they want you to, they're requesting that you put two people on the president's list. This is just so two people in your chapter are always aware of what's going on and can pass that information on. So when you fill that in for name and email address, it doesn't have to be the president. I think there's some confusion about that because it's called the president's list. It absolutely doesn't, it doesn't even have to be someone on the board. It can be the president and just someone else who you know is very good at providing information for the chapter. And then the membership, the contact person, that also goes online so that if anyone wants to contact your chapter about membership, there is someone directly to contact. Okay. The other confusing form that Ed mentioned to me was the credentials form. And I'm going to talk to you about that. The first question on this is very simple. It says which chapter will fill you in. And this is something confusing on the forms, too, because you don't know, should I put an X near it? How do they know if the X is in the middle, whether it's a chapter, an affiliate? Do they know? I tend to do something different, like I'll bold it or underline it. Or do something separate. Or the other thing I do is I erase the other one. And that's, I think, to me, that's the easiest thing to do. Just erase the one that you're not. And then, of course, the name of the affiliate and the president. Number of members that declare your chapter's home chapter. This is only for chapters. It is not for affiliates. This is not for affiliates. Even if someone in your affiliate isn't a member of a chapter, so basically the affiliate is their home chapter, it's not counted for votes because an affiliate only gets 5 votes. So the home chapter is strictly for chapter, and that needs to be clearer here, I think. And then the number of non-home chapter members, that's pretty clear. And then life members, that's clearer. And the life members, of course, again, is only for chapter members, not affiliates. What is the... What? Yes, it's a... Yeah. Mm-hmm. This, it's a choice that somebody makes. Your home chapter, for example, the closest home chapter to me is not the one that I've chosen to be my home chapter. So it's up to the member. I think when a treasurer collects the dues, they just need to ask, is this your home chapter? Or have you already designated another chapter as your home chapter? And if they already, that doesn't mean that they don't pay dues to your chapter, however, even if they're a non-home member. If it says in your constitution, this is really about your constitution. If the constitution says that anyone who joins pays dues, then those are dues that you get to keep and you don't have to send the $5 to the office for that person because you do not pay for non-home chapter members. No, you don't pay for non-home chapter because, yeah. Now you don't pay for non-home chapter members because that $5 has already been collected from their home chapter. What is an associate member? Is that something your chapter has created?
The answer is that to a large extent, CCB doesn't care. In other words, what they want to know is if the people that you claim as chapter members, if they're home chapter members, they want to know who they are, because that way they know which chapter to credit them their vote to, essentially, you know, so that when they're counting voting. If you have associate members who have a lesser privileges in your chapter, as like you say, because they're supporters rather than maybe active members, but they still collect dues, if you want to count them for purposes of voting for CCB, then you need to designate them as home chapter members for CCB, whether you treat them differently within your chapter or not. I'm aware of a case where there's actually a group that actually includes dead people in their chapter, and they actually have a class of deceased members. I think that's pretty strange, but they do. And I would presume that they would not count, I hope, unless we're in the city of Chicago. But yeah. But essentially, so essentially what the CCB cares about is, do you consider them home chapter members or not? If they're home chapter members, CCB wants their dues. If not, then don't count them as home chapter members so that they're not being double counted in voting.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say, yeah. Yeah, that's internal. That's an internal choice. Or maybe you have a student rate that may be separate. That doesn't affect what CCB, when they look at your chapter, they don't care if the person is a student or if they're associate or whatever they are. That's more what has your constitution. Are they a home chapter member or a non-home chapter member? That's the bottom line. And that can be determined in your constitution. You can say, well, someone can pay half the dues, but, you know, we're not going to consider them a home chapter member. Okay. Are they a member somewhere else? You know, so I think you do have to make a choice. You do have to make a choice. Okay. Because non-home chapter member to me means that they are a home chapter member somewhere else. They have to pay somewhere. You have to pay somehow.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. The other thing that's confusing I found on this form for people is votes. When you figure out your votes, it's I actually can send a little thing I wrote up that just basically says 28 to 32, 6 votes. 33 to 37, 8 votes. Yeah, just nice and simple, and we can include that. Does anyone know, is there a maximum? Is it 25? I believe 25 is the maximum amount of votes. You have to look it up?
I think that's probably true, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. It's 25. That's a lot of people. If you can... Yeah. Well... You get 5 votes if up to 27 people. I mean, it says 25, but actually you have to round it. So if you have 27 people, it's still 5 votes. But if you get to 28, then you're closer to 30, right? So they consider that 6 votes. Yeah, so I think it's easier if we just send a document that just says the numbers and how many votes. I think it'll just be much easier to figure it out. Any other questions? I need to. Oh, you're very welcome. I'm sorry I couldn't answer all your questions, but you've given me good food for thought to go back to Peter with, so that's always helpful. And he's in my chapter, so I have his ear.
And I'm still here. So, but what I think is also important, though, is, you know, when we talk about these forms, of course, is that you can ask questions when you have difficulties with forms. You know, you can call in to the office and ask. That's right. One thing that's also important, along with and what we hope this the toolbox will promote, is that I think that it is important for chapters to develop a handoff procedure, because you often will get this where somebody will be, especially this happens especially with secretaries and treasurers, where somebody gets newly elected to one of the positions and either they're not told what they're supposed to do, or for whatever reason the previous person doesn't turn the records over. So you end up, when you want to look back at records, you discover that there's no records available from the time before your current secretary or treasurer was elected, because the person before didn't give them their files. So it's important to check with your chapter and make sure that you set up procedures for handover, you know. And you might even want to physically go out and buy a box where you put stuff, so that when it's time for when the next person gets elected to secretary, you know, the previous secretary hands over the official minutes binder, say, or the treasurer hands over the official ledger or whatever, so that there's a handoff, you know, so that you keep those records.
Yes, Vita. Important. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, I forgot this really important thing. We all know that those credentialing forms are due on February 15th, but that does not mean that people should come up and pay you February 14th. I'm a big believer that you set a date in your chapter. The dues need to be in by January 31st. Because you, as the person who completes these forms, have to have them in by the 15th. So you need the time to put it together, right? And you should be allowed that time. You shouldn't have to fill it out at the last minute. So it's something you can put in your constitution, or you just say to the chapter, I need the dues in by January 31st. And what I do is I start in September. Dues are due by the end of the year in October. Dues are due in November. Every chapter meeting, I say that they're due. And I usually do get them in before February. It's really, you know, you have the right to give yourself time to complete these forms and complete them properly. So you need to give yourself additional time. Okay.
All right. Well, Vita's going to get moving on to her other activities. She's actually being involved in the employment track today. And then we're going to, but I can still answer any questions you may have about forms. And I was a treasurer for a time in the past, and I've been a secretary, and I spend a lot of time with Vita, so I get to observe a lot of what she works on with the forms that she works with. So if you have any other questions about forms that you have to deal with sending in to the CCB office, I'd be happy to give a shot at answering them.
Do you have a list off the top of your head of the different forms?
List of the different forms. Okay. The first one that comes due is that fundraising report, because the CCB office needs that pretty early on. So if they could, they would probably have you send that to them on December 31st, but really, you know, early January. And then most of the forms that need to go in then are due on February 15th. There's your membership roster. Of course, there's your annual dues payment that needs to go in. There's your list of officers information. And if this amendment that we're going to be discussing tomorrow passes, then you would also need to have your credentials form in at February 15th. And also, if your chapter is involved in doing something at the convention, whether it is having a table in the exhibit room or doing some kind of a presentation at the during the convention, or say if you want to put in an advertisement in the convention program perhaps, then there can be other deadlines, and that'll depend on when the convention is. You know, like if the convention is in early April, then those forms would be due earlier. If the convention was in late May, they would be due a little later. And so I don't know exactly what the lead time is for those forms, but the big ones you have to worry about are those ones that are due on February 15th ones, and then that fundraising report. A budget. That is internal. I strongly recommend it. We do a budget in our chapter. It's very helpful. First of all, if you do a budget, you know, it's a great planning tool. But also, if your membership votes on items in your budget, then when that it's later on in the year when that item comes up, you don't have to re-vote on it. For example, if you budget, well, for example, in our chapter we include a budget item for door prizes for the convention, right? We budget a certain amount each year that we're going to contribute as door prizes. So that means that when convention time comes around, we don't have to go back and decide how much are we going to do for door prizes, because we already did when we voted the budget. And you can put a lot of those expenses that you know are going to come all there in the budget, you know, and you can nail that down in your annual meeting, whenever that is. You know, here's our 2017 budget, and we all go over it and we agree on it, and it's done.
Yeah, I was trying to do that this
year, but yeah. We usually do ours, I think, in January. Yeah. Yeah. And I hope I'll try to remember to include a sample budget in the toolbox, because we've gotten some experience with that, and I think you'll find that helpful if we can remember to do that. And if I don't include that in the toolbox, remind me. Okay, great. Because that would be very helpful to have, because I think the budget scares a lot of people. But I think that when you see it and you get an idea what is supposed to be in the budget, it becomes easy for you to figure out what the figures are you need.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Okay. Correct. Exactly. And you're saying, why do we have two forms, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Maybe just put it as maybe just a
page. I think the reason is because they're used in different ways. I mean, the main thing that the roster is for is that what CCB needs that roster for is, first off, they need to actually know how many people there are actually, you know, who are these people that you're paying dues for, and does that match? You know, for example, if you send in dues for 40 people and you list 48 people on your roster, there needs to be some explanation, right? And that, so the roster is what accounts for these people. And also, CCB has to submit a roster of all of our members to the ACB, and I think it's due on March 15th. So that's why we need it February 15th, so that we have time to enter this data into the ACB database. And they need that information. So the information that we ask you on the, you know, for your roster is the same information that ACB is asking us. Exactly, exactly. And also, that's one of the other reasons why we have the home chapter member thing, is so that if, you know, for example, if Frank Welty is a member on the San Francisco and the Contra Costa chapter, since he's identified as a home chapter member in San Francisco, then the CCB office doesn't need to put him down twice, you know, because we know this is his chapter. This is the only, there's only one Frank Welty. Yeah. And then the officer's form, on the other hand, is used for some other things. For example, we just need to know who the officers are. You know, who is the president? Who is responsible for the chapter? You know, who is the treasurer? Who's the person who's we're supposed to send the forms to? Who's the secretary? You know, we need, you know, the CCB needs to know that so that they can direct communications to the right officer. Also, so that there are contact points in the chapter. You know, like. You know, if we want to refer a potential new member to the chapter, we need to know where to send them to. So that's why we have a separate officer form, is because it's a different requirement in terms of what the CCB needs to know for officers versus your rank and file members. And it makes it easier to have it on a separate form rather than just the CCB having to go through your 30 members in order to find your five officers, right? It's all in one place. It is a very new, it's pretty new yours, yes, it is. Yes. Yeah, and also we've added email address, email list. For example, you have the president's list, you have the membership list. So we need to know, you know, what is the email address that you're going to use for the person who's going to represent you on a given list. Or on the website, you know, when they have the page of chapter, the listing of chapters on the website, and there's going to be an email address for that chapter contact. Who is that? That's what you use the form to identify them. Any other form questions? And those forms really are important. I mean, we know it's a pain in the neck. We know it, and we don't do it because we're trying to be jerks. We do it because it's information that we need in order to serve you better, and in order to fulfill our responsibilities to the ACB. So it is important, and that's why we're talking about it, because we want you to understand them, because the more you understand them, the easier they're going to be to fill out. Okay, that's forms. Just one last question. Does anybody have any other thoughts of things that you want to see in the leadership toolbox? And I will definitely try to include sample forms in those, in the toolbox, because that's obviously important too. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. I can look into that. Yeah. I mean, of course, there is the officer list in the Blind Californian, but yeah, I can see if there's something we need something more than that, and even just putting it in a separate document so it's easier for you to find that way. That would be helpful. Just, or other important contacts, so that you can know, like if you have a membership issue, who's the membership committee chair and how do I contact them? Yeah. Exactly. Sure. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes. Right. Right. Uh-huh. That's a good point. Yes. One other thing that I'm going to try to do is that I'm going to work with the fundraising committee for CCB on this, is to develop information about ideas for fundraisers. you know, whether it's places that do fundraisers. Who was talking to me when we came in about a fundraiser that you just discovered recently? Who was that? When you were, it was Carl's Jr., I think it was. Yes. Oops, sorry. Yeah, a number of restaurants do, and we're going to be working on identifying more of places, of businesses that have charitable opportunities, partnership opportunities, and we're going to try to work on sharing more of that with your chapters so that you have a whole range of options for fundraisers. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, exactly. And. Right, and there. Yeah. Yeah. Right, and that's something we could do. Is we could start doing annual appeal letters, and I think that's something that they do. Yeah, sure. Yeah, and yeah, sure, and right, and the monthly monetary support program. Yes, yes, and for those of you that haven't heard of that, it's a program that the American Council of the Blind does where. You can sign up with ACB for their MMS program, and they will then take out a certain amount of money from either your checking account or from a credit card each month, and you have the option of either giving it all to ACB or splitting it between ACB and one affiliate. So, for example, you can give up to 50%. So you could give half to ACB and half to CCB, and that's an option that is out there. I would definitely encourage those who you might be interested to do that. Yes, so it's almost easier just to give a donation and be done with it. Yes.
But I don't think that's the case anymore.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that. Yeah. Yeah. But the value is of the item. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And as time goes along, we're going to add more. I'm going to add more and more information on fundraising into the toolbox, because that's the other. My two emphases, as I mentioned last night, are fundraising and leadership development. So those go hand in hand. So.
Do you want me to still share the comments?
Yes, do. Sure. And let me give. Here's the mic, and you can share the details about that, because I know this one that I didn't know about.
Okay. My name is Tanya, and I'm Yosemite Gateway. I was working with COVE at the time, and I was passing out donation letters to the vendors, and I went into Carl's Jr., and she said, contact our district manager. Well, when I contacted the district manager, what they say they do is they don't give coupons or anything, but what they will do is they will have a nonprofit day for you, to where you send them a letter, and they will, and the district manager gives you 2 days for you to just for whatever proceeds that they make. If someone mentions your agency, your organization, or brings in their coupon, you get like a certain percentage. I think it was 20% of all the sales, and you get the check within a couple weeks. But it's just like almost a freebie fundraiser. Very, very simple.
Oh, Applebee's. Tell us about that. Okay, so I'm bringing over the mic. Right. Here we go.
I hear things and I go, oh my God, I remember it. Okay. Yeah. So for 2 years now for the Blind Center, and actually we're going to do it for our chapter this year as well, we do what's called the Applebee's Flapjack Fundraiser. You go to your local Applebee's and you say, hey, you know, I'm a nonprofit. I need some money. Help me out. So basically you pick a day, and it's usually a Saturday morning from 8 to 10 when they're not open to the public. And you sell your tickets. They're $10 a piece, and you get half back. So you make $5 off of each ticket. And depending on how big your Applebee's is, you can raise, you know, with us, ours was 300 people they could fit. So you have the possibility of raising $1,500. We sold 180 tickets. So what would that be? $900. So $900, and I'll be honest, it was just two of us really pushing selling tickets. So can you imagine if you had a whole chapter, you know, really working and each person doing so many tickets at a time? And some Applebee's will even let you do more than one day, you know, so that's another good one. And it's fairly simple, and you can tag on a raffle with it. We did that as well, and I think we made something like almost, I think it was like $545 just off the raffle alone, and we only advertised one prize, so that was really cool. You know, so another idea, sorry.
Oh, do they really? Oh, I'm sorry, I'll tell you what it is. It's an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's
buffet.
Yeah, yes, it's all-you-can-eat. No, well, it's for $10. Yeah, it's all-you-can-eat. You get your, yeah, pancakes, potatoes, either bacon or sausage, and eggs. And then it's also, of course, coffee and juice. And, I mean, if you can eat, you can sit there for the 2 hours and just keep eating. And you need about 10 volunteers to do this. We actually reach out to our local Delta Gamma sorority.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah. Chili's is one. I know that. I know I've heard of people doing Chevy's. I've heard of the, you know, Chevy's doing it. Marie Callender's, uh-huh. So there's... Well, they do pies, but they're also a full-service restaurant as well.
Yeah.
Shakey's Pizza. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you know, you don't have to put money out of pocket to do those. You just... print up the flyers and pass them around, and then whatever comes in, comes in. You know, so if you get $100, great. If you get $500, great. And you can do a number of those throughout the year, and they can add up. So, and they're simple. Okay, Ben. Okay, Ben. Well, it might be something to check into. We can. White Cane Day, yeah.
So wouldn't it be something if we could make it to where each one of our chapters in our own areas where we did, you know, say Applebee's or Red Robin or whatever, and
we all did something on October 15th.
Everybody on October 15th. And then that way, you know, and then what we could do is we could split whatever profit we made between the state and chapter local. And the state. Yeah. Ooh, that's something.
That's a pretty cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I don't know, does everybody here within your chapter, do you guys have your own Facebook?
We haven't yet. But
You know, the Facebook helps out when you can send out the invites.
Yes.
You know, you'd be.
About a page.
Yeah, your own Facebook page. It makes such a difference because, and especially like we have three different people that are administrators of ours. And so they can go through and, you know, say one person's, you know, we have two people here, you know, and so they're going through and posting what's going on here.
Yeah.
You know, it helps out a lot, definitely.
And that could go on the CCB page, too, as everybody's doing along. I know it's always a connection.
And I'll give you one little insight into CCB is that they've had an ongoing project, and it's still ongoing, where their plan is to revamp the web page. But it's not just that they're going to edit it and change the content, but they're going to do it on a new system that's going to make it easier to update and that will let us do things like online forms, stuff like that. So when that happens, and it hasn't happened yet, but I think that's when you're going to start seeing a lot more functionality on the CCB website that will let us do a lot more of those kinds of things that we get frustrated now because we don't have the online convention forum and we don't have an online dues forum. And that's because we don't yet have the infrastructure, but it is being worked on. And when it comes through, then you're going to start seeing a lot of things happening. So keep those ideas because the time is coming before too much longer when we'll be in a position to start working on those more than we are now. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what platform they're doing. That's a good question. I don't know. Drupal is the system that it'll be. Yeah, Phil is one of the people on the technical operations group, so he's an insider there. No. Vida is the chair of. But don't tell her I said that because then she'll be mad at me because I told you. It is. There's a list of in our program. There's a list of committees, and who's on what committee right now. So. Okay, so. I think this is exciting. I think this toolbox is something that we really need. All of our chapters need it. And it's something that I care about. If I get slow, feel free to bug me about getting that to you because I know I owe every one of you the toolbox. And each year we're going to make it better. My email address is... Okay, tell me when you're ready. frank.a.welte, and that's welte. So it's frank.a.welte. Actually, the first letter is the F and the A and the W are uppercase, but it doesn't matter. And it's @gmail.com. And so feel free to write. Last thing I want to talk about in the track today is that I want us to have a discussion of something that happens to all of us. And that is that we all have those personality issues that we run into in our chapters. Whether it's just certain people that just plain don't like each other, or you've got some certain people who are just really weird. And come on, we all have them, don't we? Oh, yeah. So the question is, we've got all these people that get together, and the truth of the matter is that the only thing we necessarily have in common is that our eyes don't work right. So the question then is, how do we make this diverse bunch of people come together without beating each other up? And it's a challenge. And so this is a chance when we can talk about, I want to talk about whether it's that you have a question or you have an idea or an insight. I'd like us to talk about that. One thing I will ask is that you not name names, and that if it's somebody that's probably somewhat well-known in the community, where if you say too much about them, when they know who you're talking about, be careful how you describe them. You're like, but let's talk about ideas. I want to share some thoughts first, is that I think one thing that's really important to remember when we interact with each other in our chapters is that everybody in the chapter is a volunteer. You know, we're not getting paid. And that means that just, you know, sometimes we'll get frustrated with people because they don't get something done as fast as we want, or they don't do it the way we want. And sometimes we take some of the standards that we might use in work and apply it to the people in our chapters. And like, you think, like, you know, if the secretary at work didn't get this form done to me by 5 o'clock, I'd give her a talking to, right? But the truth of the matter is that this secretary in your chapter isn't getting paid. And yeah, and either they could walk away or they've got a life. You know, they didn't have 8 hours to work on this thing. They had to do it between 8:30 and 9 when they put the kids down, right? You know? So I think the first thing that we have to do is, and it's hard to hold in our minds, I know that, but to honor what the people that come to our chapter are contributing just by being there. The fact that they're giving of their time, which is a commodity, to be there. You know, they whether it's, you know, they come to the meeting every month, or they're volunteering to do a certain task or whatever. The other thing is that most of them are not trained as aren't experts. You know, they don't have a, you know, somebody agrees to be your treasurer, they don't have an accounting degree, right? You know, they're people. You know, your chapter president does not have a degree in nonprofit management. And so I think that we need to keep that in mind, that when we find people that we may not be happy with, to remember that, you know, they are giving of themselves and their time, and we need to honor that and respect for them for what they are contributing, even if it's not done the way you would do it. I mean, I think the other thing to remember, too, is that my way is not the only way. So that if Bob chooses to write minutes differently than I do, I may not like it, but that doesn't mean that he's doing it wrong. And I think we have to remember that. I think another thing to remember is that sometimes when you have people who are behaving in a way that can be difficult, is that it may be because they're dealing with issues. You know, and I think you see this a lot in the blindness community, where you see people who are really, like, attack each other, you know, are hard on each other. And I think it's because blindness is difficult. That doesn't mean that it's a tragedy and horrible, but it gets difficult. And sometimes you just get a short fuse because of the stuff you've been putting up with for the, you know, all week, right? You know, and so sometimes you'll see people who will just be snappy,
And it's because they're dealing with stuff. And sometimes we have to sort of give each other some slack and realize, you know, okay, yeah, they shouldn't be acting that way, but, you know, there's a reason sometimes, and we need to factor some of that in and give them a break, you know. And sometimes we have to also give ourselves a break when we make mistakes too. Another issue is just that there are different personality types. You know, some people are right-brained. You know, they're very artistic. You know, they're kind of they're not so much detail-oriented. They're more kind of philosophical. They're more aesthetic, creative. You know, and if Mr. Aesthetic and Creative is the treasurer, you might get some interesting results in terms of aesthetic. On the other hand, if you got somebody who's really left-brained, you know, they're very analytical. They like numbers to add up. They're detail-oriented. And if you want that guy to be the party planner, well, that might be a problem. So I think part of the challenge is that when you see personalities, you can think about, you know, who, you know, what is, you know, that there are different personality types. And a couple of years ago, we had a great segment in our leadership track where we talked about personality types. We actually, we all kind of like decided which personality type we were, and we kind of grouped together on our different personality types. And we identified which job in a chapter would be best for a particular personality type. And it might be that as we look for people to play roles in our chapters, that we can take advantage of that as identifying, you know, which people are the artistic types, you know, which people are the driver types, the people that want to push and get things done, which people are the social types, you know, which people are the analytical types, and encourage them to go into those areas in your chapter that fit their strengths. You know, if you got a guy who's an accountant, guess who you want to get to be your treasurer, right? You know? And then the other thing is that sometimes when you run into behavior or personality difficulties, it may be that this is a way of people trying to, you know, that it's really a misdirected way of expressing concern. For example, you may have somebody who's very critical of what's going on in the chapter, right? Now, it may be that the reason this person is critical is it may actually be that it's because they're having difficulties in their own life, and it's not really about you or the chapter. It's more like they're just not happy. Or it may be that there are people who the reason they're so critical is because they feel like they're not being heard. And so they get angry and frustrated. And so in that case, the answer might be to give them a chance to contribute. So that if you find somebody who's really critical about the chapter, it may be that the thing to do is try to work with them to find out what is the particular aspect of the chapter that they care about and give them the chance to take charge of it. Also, you have the problem in the chapter, of course, of a lot of people who don't want to seem to do anything, right? And I think sometimes that happens because, unfortunately, in our chapters, we sometimes don't make it safe for people to want to try things. You know, they've seen how other people maybe have been made the chair of a given committee, and then when the committee tries to do something, if it's not done just right, they get their heads bit off. So then the other chapter members see that happen, and they realize, I'd better not, you know, stick my neck out because I'm going to get it chopped off, right? And so by being aware of that, if you find that your chapter isn't the most supportive place it could be, is to work with the chapter members to be more supportive, but also the ones that are, you know, that are critical, again, they maybe have their own issues that their needs aren't being met. So rather than just criticizing them for being critical, see what their needs are. And so that and if they can get their needs met, then maybe they won't be so critical. Those are just some of the thoughts I have about dealing with personality issues in your chapters, just to start the discussion. Perhaps I'd like to hear from the rest of you about what are some of the types, perhaps, of interpersonal difficulties or struggles that you have encountered in your chapter that you might like to get other people's input on and ideas of how that might work out? Does anybody want to? Sure. Okay. And Mr. X, the treasurer.
Yeah, Mr. X, the treasurer. We all have problems with him at Braille Club. He's also a member at Braille Club. Was a member. And every time the rooms got really noisy, he had a hissy fit. We ended up finding out he's a bipolar. He was not on medication. And he was having issues. And when I first started him as treasurer, he wanted everything his way. He wanted the chapter to go his way. Everybody was mad at him. Well, then within the last year, me and him have very graciously became friends. And I said, well, you can do it the way you want it, but I suggest this. So now we're on good talking terms, finally. But it took me almost 3.5 years to get on good talking terms with him.
Getting to know him better and finding out what his issues were. And
yes.
And then being able to, based on that knowledge, being able to communicate in a way that worked for him,
and
right?
Eventually what happened is he actually got a psychiatrist,
which was wonderful for all of us.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Right next to
yes.
While you're standing here.
Sure.
This is Tanya, and I'm kind of new to presidency. One of the first issues I dealt with is there was a person who was president, but she wasn't legally blind. So we had to ask her to step down. And she was sitting next to me, not knowing that I was the new president. And I asked her where she had been. She says, well, you know, they kicked me out of being president. And, boy, I had a lot to add. And, boy, they're going to miss me when I'm gone. And I'm like, well, you know what? I'm the new president, and I hope you don't leave me, because I know you were elected because you had a lot of good things to give us, and I'm really looking forward to your guidance and helping me to be a better president. And she was kind of shocked. She was quiet for a minute, but then she said, you know what? I will. I'll be there for you if I can. And so I kind of diffused it in when I am conducting the meetings and when we're discussing a topic, and if somebody is like their personality is really, really coming out and becoming disruptive, I try to keep the meeting focused on our agenda and kind of keep it directed without attacking the person, but just say, okay, let's on topic. This is where we're going. We've got a short meeting. We all want to have lunch and just find a commonality and what we all on the goal that we all want to reach, without telling the person that, you know, we can't go their way.
I love the way you did that, you acknowledged her feelings, and you gave her the opportunity to know that she was still valued and that she would have a place and still be a contributor and not just be thrown out just because there was a change. And that was a very great way to handle that. Okay, let's, sure.
I'm Gail, and we're talking about an episode at Orange County Chapter, which sometimes it's called, what you see is not what you're going to get, let's put it that way. This individual was at that time also a student at Braille Institute, and I met her there and told her about the meeting, and she was extremely pleased about coming and so forth. So the first time she comes, and, you know, it's like a little gesture. I was happy to get her lunch and all that, at least once, you know. The next time she arrived, and halfway through lunch, she suddenly says, oh, I forgot to bring any money. And that was repeated new people in the group, she would make the same remark. This was clearly a pattern. And there were other issues, too. She would take cell phone calls in the middle of the meeting and seemed oblivious when we asked her to please either leave the room or turn it off or whatever. It was less like she didn't even hear us. And there were several other things. And it just got serious enough that finally we felt compelled to talk to the office because we were going to have to ask her to possibly go into some sort of a behavior contract. And certainly we wanted her there. She had a lot of potential and seemed to be in some way relating. But it turned out later that she was basically looking that and other organizations we found out later for milking funds for something else. So if, heaven forbid, you get into a situation like that, it's very important to be very clear about the issue. We're not asking you to leave because we don't like you. These are the points. And we did discuss this with Jeff and make sure that we were legally on solid ground in a situation like that. I hope you never get into it. It's just an unpleasant thing. But sometimes you have to draw a line and say, look, but your behavior we don't like. It's not personal. It certainly isn't religious, although that was an issue in her eyes also. And I hope it doesn't come to that. But if you do, be sure, again, that you're real clear. You don't want to be discriminating against a person. Perhaps you may try to encourage and ask her, you know, we really like what you're doing. You had a lot of things going that could, but as it turned out later, and eventually she was had to leave Braille Institute too, and we don't even know where she is now. It's just a sad thing, and I really had hoped it would work out differently. But sometimes, just again, in cases like that, have your I's dotted, your T's crossed, and don't try really hard to keep yourself out of a personal reaction or an anger reaction, because these people have major issues, and you're not going to solve them, that's for sure.
Thank you. Does anybody want to comment on that? Any insights you might want to share, or if you've had... Okay. Here I come.
Okay. Yes. I like that because sometimes you just have to draw the line. We had a gentleman who had joined us for a while, and he had a lot of positive things. He could be an excellent speaker. Because he had a history, he'd been shot recently and had to adjust to his blindness. A lot of people listened to him, and you know, he could be an attribute. But unfortunately, he had a tendency, when he'd come to meetings, of picking fights with people he didn't like. And 9 times out of 10, it ended up in a real negative experience. And so he had to just kind of say, okay, you know, this is kind of the rules of behavior. Either, you know, this is the way it has to be, and you don't necessarily have to love everyone here, but you do have to work with people. They paid their $15. They got just as much right to be here as you do. And he ultimately has chosen not to get involved with us anymore. And it's too bad, but sometimes you have to look at the greater good of the chapter and, you know, the rest of the members who were there. And it's never pleasant. It's never easy. But sometimes those things do happen.
Sure.
To get people to our meetings and to get them there on time so we can start on time, what I've started doing is I give away raffle tickets for those who are there before I start the meeting. And I have door prizes for those who are there and on time. And when I announce a meeting and when I send out the reminders, I remind people that if those who are there on time, it's possible you can get rewarded for just showing up and being there.
Yes. By the way, I love that. That's creative.
She's a very creative lady. I just would like to add that we did have an incident. Our chapter is fairly new, and it was only a couple years into it. Long story short, we had somebody take over the presidency. They thought she could do better than it had been in the past. She wanted to totally change the focus of what the chapter was about. We wanted it mainly as advocacy and support and things like that. They wanted to make it a very social club. On top of that, there's nothing wrong with it being social, but they were young and they were trying to get some young people in, and there were three young people, you know, as hard as they tried, and it was probably about 15 seniors. And it slowly started kind of discouraging the seniors from coming, to the point where I think only two showed up at a meeting. I didn't make it to that meeting, but they got so disgusted after the meeting that nobody showed up, and they're all great ideas, that they turned around and called, Donna was president at the time, and they called Ed and said, we're going to dissolve the chapter. Where do I send the money? And I got a call from Donna saying, what's going on, Margaret? And we reorganized and got things going again. We did lose their membership, but at the same time, you know, we've got 30-plus members. So unfortunately, and now we finally have them kind of coming around again, you know, 5 years later. So I think sometimes it's really, really hard to let somebody go, so to speak, when, especially when you know they can use the support. But you can't let it bring down your chapter either.
Yeah. Did I hear somebody else calling for a mic? And I think it is important to have some, to have standards of conduct, you know, in the group, not only for the group as a whole, but I think for the individuals, you know. There are a couple of things. So let me talk about that a little bit, because I think it's relevant to a number of issues, is that essentially you can have three places where you can have rules. One is constitution, one is bylaws, and then one is just what you would call something like standing rules. And actually, if you look at Robert's Rules of Order, which is that famous, scary, boring book about how to run meetings, which I actually recommend, even though it's really boring, is that, by the way, it is available from NLS. They have it there, so you can download it or you can get it. Anyway, though, what they mentioned is that in modern organizations, they really refer more to bylaws than constitution. And really the only reason that you would have a constitution rather than having just bylaws is if you want to have certain elements of your organization that are harder to change. So for example, in the case of a lot of constitutions I've seen, a constitution will require, let's say, 2/3 vote to change, and maybe they'll require a certain amount of lead time after an amendment has been proposed before it can be voted on. Whereas the bylaws will be something where you can change it with a majority vote, and you can, you know, on the same day when it's selected. And so what you'll tend to do is you'll tend to put the permanent things in the constitution, like, you know, the structure, like who your officers are, how many board members you have, when, how often you meet, really kind of things that, you know, you don't plan to change very often. But things that aren't as fundamental to your organization, like where you meet, you know, what day of the month you meet on, how much your dues are, things that are going to be likely to change and that you don't want to have it very hard to change, you'll put them in your bylaws. But then beyond that, you'll have things that are mainly about how you run a meeting. That'll be like your standing rules. For example, in ACB, every year at the ACB convention, one of the first pieces of business they do is to approve their standing rules. Things like that, you know, when there's our debates, the debates will go for 20 minutes. You know, that they'll, and they have some other rules like that are mainly about how the meeting is run. Rules, yeah, kind of rules of conduct, how the meeting, you know, like how debates are going to be handled. Yeah, things like that, you know. And that might, so that if you want to set up, say, rules about conduct and behavior in a meeting, that might be the place to put it, rather than putting it in the constitution or bylaws, is to have a set of standing rules. Because, yeah, and it would be that, you know, like, you know, there would be like, you know, like, don't interrupt or whatever, you know, and, you know, no cell phones during the meeting, you know, no, you know, You know, everybody must have a chance to speak once before the next person speaks. And actually, there's a lot of stuff like that that are actually in Robert's Rules of Order, and that's why they're. And if you if your organization constitution says that, that the governing authority of your organization is Robert's Rules, the reason they do that is because there are a lot of rules there that are already set forth. But you can always override them. So you can. That's why you have your individual rules. But so if you want to address behavioral issues that might come up, it's probably best to put them in rules rather than in the bylaws. Because then you can be more flexible about them and tailor them to your situations. Because, you know, it may be that this year you've got a particular issue with using cell phones during the meeting. But maybe a couple years down the road when more people have more experience with cell phones and they've sort of gotten used to that whole, you know, what cell phone etiquette is appropriate, that maybe you won't have so much of a problem with that. And that might be how you handle a lot of that. And then if you give, you know, every member a copy of the rules when they join the chapter, then they're kind of, then they're informed, you know, this is what, how, what is what it, is what's expected in terms of your behavior in a meeting. And then if somebody's misbehaving, you can point them that, you know about this rule. Rule 3 says you're not supposed to do this. And I think that'll help, because then they know that they're not just being singled out because you don't like them, but it's because there's a rule that they're not following. And I think most people do want to follow a rule as long as they know it's fair and it's being applied equally, you know. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
We put together, oh here, sorry about that. Grab it. Thank you.
Orange County chapter is working on putting together a brief pamphlet, basically, introducing, and I bet you have material we can incorporate into this. I forgot to ask for it. Information about CCB in general, ACB, and what our goals and objectives are, and Orange County chapter in particular, what sort of things we're, you know, maybe currently working on or interested in or whatever, that we can hand out to those who attend that might be interested in coming back, and we could add some rules with that, you know, just general things. And I certainly would, I'm sure we would welcome anything that you've already got working. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. And also be happy to share that when we put it together, and you might want to put it in the toolbox, or at least a bot version of it.
Sure. And you might even want to post that. You might want to post that on the CCB president's list to share with other chapters immediately, because I think a lot of people would find that helpful. Yes. Great. Can attachments be sent to the CCB list? I think it depends. I know I've gotten attachments on CCB lists. They can. Okay. So you can try it anyway. And of course, when you want to send an attachment, you want to be reasonable about it. Like a 30 megabyte MP3 would probably not be appropriate to send as an attachment, but a 300K, you know, Word document should be fine. Yeah. And because a lot of people do have mail services where they can only have, you know, maybe a couple megabytes in their inbox, you know. Does anybody have any other issues in terms of personality challenges that you encounter from in your chapter that you want to either share how you dealt with them or throw them out there for to see what ideas we have about those situations? Nope. Yes. Yeah, Robert's Rules of Order. For those of you that haven't heard of it, you may have heard the people refer to it. There was a general in the 19th century. He was a career military guy, and he moved around the country a lot because he was in the military, right? You know, he'd be posted here and there. And he was very civic-minded. So as he was going to his different postings, he'd get involved in the communities where he was, and so he'd join different groups. And what he noticed was that there were all kinds of different ways these people would do their meetings. And he thought that was kind of crazy. So he made up a set of standardized rules. And what he did first was he tried to look at the rules for the House of Representatives and use that as a guide. But he decided that was way too complicated. So he worked up his own set of rules. And he called it, and his name was, I think it was Henry Robert, I believe it was. Since Robert's Rules of Order. And he published them. And they've continued. And he's, of course, he was in the 19th century, so he's been dead for a long time. And they're now up to like the 9th or 10th edition of Robert's Rules of Order. So whoever the organization is that sort of inherited the book, they update it from time to time, you know, with rules. And so a lot of organizations that have meetings, that do business, will use Robert's Rules of Order as their guidebook for how to run meetings. And it has some other things, like it gives information about how to do a constitution and what the responsibilities of officers are. And if you have discipline problems, how you deal with those in a formal way. A lot of people get scared by Robert's Rules of Order because it is kind of a dry piece of writing to go through. But the secret about Robert's Rules of Order is that, first of all, the goal of Robert's Rules of Order is to follow a set of consistent rules so that business is done in an efficient way, but also while still giving everybody their fair say. And so they set up a bunch of rules that have that in mind. And so when you hear rules referred to in Robert's Rules of Order, like they talk about motions and amendments and subsidiary motions and which thing requires a majority of vote and which things require a two-thirds vote. If you find that confusing, if you start by realizing that every rule in Robert's Rules of Order is meant to make business go more smoothly and still give everybody their say, then they start making more sense because you realize, okay, the reason that you have to have a motion for stuff to get done is because you need to actually be talking about something, you know, before, if you want to get some business done, you need to be starting with a proposal, right? You know, rather than just everybody sort of talking and getting off on all kinds of subjects. You start with a motion that basically says, we want to do this. That's the motion, you know. And then you have discussion about it. You go back and forth. Who's in favor of this? Who's against it? Does somebody want to change it? Okay, what's an orderly way to make a change that gets the business done reasonably quickly but still gives everybody a chance to get their say? Right, right. And Robert's Rules of Order does, like, if I remember correctly, I think that there's somewhere in Robert's Rules of Order, it says something like that a person is not supposed to be allowed to speak more than twice on the same issue in the same day, I think it is. Of course, you can adopt your own chapter rules that are different than that to fit your circumstances. That's why you have separate, you know, your individual rules. But the point of the rules is just so that there's a consistent set of procedures for taking care of business in a meeting. And it's more important, I think, to follow the spirit of what the rules are trying to accomplish than to get everything done exactly the right way in terms of, oh no, we did a majority instead of two-thirds. But, you know, if the majority was all in, you know, but if everybody was sort of agreeing to that, then you're probably all right, as long as that was being done fairly and it wasn't done as a way to shut other people down, you know. By the same token, some people will use the rules to try and do exactly the opposite of what the rules intend. You ever hear of parliamentary maneuvering? That's actually contrary to the spirit of Robert's Rules of Order. You know, when somebody starts playing parliamentary games, either to try to railroad something through the group or to try and shut something down because they can't actually get their way by, you know, just by straightforward argument, that's really contrary to the rules of what Robert's Rules intends. And in fact, sometimes the chair should probably rule some of that stuff out of order if it's being used, you know, to derail stuff rather than let things be done fairly. So that's the long answer to your question. Robert's Rules of Order is a rule book for people running meetings and organizations. Is there anything else? Sure. I hope we can do both, because I think I would like to get back to the previous format of the President's Dinner where we did share ideas, just because I think that it's because the President's Dinner is kind of something where everybody can come together, and it's a very relaxed atmosphere, and it's pretty free form. So it's kind of a fun place where people can share ideas. Where, on the other hand, yeah. Well, I think, though, that on the other hand, this leadership track gives us a chance to get into things in depth. You know, we can take more time for a subject. We can get more in depth with a subject that's important. And in a way that you could never do in the President's Dinner. So I think there's really value in both. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's something we've been missing. I mean, I think that what we've been doing... Yes. I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And isn't it fun when you sit down at a table with people you don't know and you're eating dinner and you just start going around the table saying, who are you? Where are you from? And you start throwing ideas around and everything. Isn't that fun? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that we all miss that. You know, I think that the candidates forums that we've been doing have been important. I think they've made a huge difference in terms of, you know, how elections have turned out, because we've heard people that maybe weren't known so well, but they got to be heard, and they were elected because people said, hey, there's somebody who's got something to say, you know. Yeah. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, absolutely not. I mean, my hope is that it goes far and wide, and especially that when people are, you know, that's something that leaders pass on to to other people as they come along. It's certainly not meant to be a private document in any way. I think I want to get it out as far as it'll go. Because I think that is really exciting to be able to do that. You know, to let more people in our organization increase their knowledge of how to make things work. Well, yeah. Well, I want to finish up and just I'm looking forward to doing another one of these leadership tracks next year. And my goal, again, like I said earlier, is that I want to do leadership tracks for as long as people will let me do them. And so I have an idea about something that I know I want to cover next year. I want to do an in-depth session on incorporation and 501(c) status and what that all means. Do people have other ideas for stuff they would like to see in future leadership tracks? Because I want to know. I want to make this something that really meets your needs, where... And especially if there's a lot of you here who have the same issues, then I can make it a priority. So I just want to run the mic around quickly before we finish up and just say, what are a couple of topics that you would really like to see in next year's leadership track?
Okay, who's here? Here's here.
Okay. There you are. I would like to see, as part of, go back maybe, or I would like to see part of when the president's calls were going to be maybe, and then, or just lots of just general, j- just information about CCB and just some of the protocol of things, like when the president's conference calls are and stuff like that. Just so I think it's good for members to know that CCB does this stuff and that there is communication between the board and just the general members. And I think people, I want them to feel a part of the state organization and not think of it as this big obtuse thing that doesn't give a darn, you know, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else at this table?
I'd like to see some more information on what's happening with Medi-Cal and those things, because and Social Security too.
Okay, now that's something we probably wouldn't cover in the leadership track, but I would encourage you to if you're not already on the CCBL email list, get on there, because like from time to time you'll hear a notice from the convention coordinator asking for ideas, and I would definitely pass that on to we're going to be getting a new convention chair, but I would when we find out who that is, I would definitely encourage you to let them know that is an issue you'd like to see covered at the convention, because I think that's important to a lot of people. I mean, Medicare, Medi-Cal is complicated, it's confusing, and I think we would all benefit from that. So I'm glad you made that suggestion.
Yep. Anybody down here at the end?
Nope.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Other leadership track things that you'd like to maybe see next year?
I like the idea, like she said, with communicating within your chapter, uh-huh, without your chapter, with the state, and within your community. Mm-hmm. Maybe some helpful hints on communicating with the different areas, and maybe just some tips and tricks on doing that, and when and how often, so you don't bug people to death, but you get your requests known.
Remember when we had the teleconference on the phone? Why can't we have a teleconference with all the presidents of the chapter and getting together and doing ideas that way too? Because they like the teleconference.
Mm-hmm. Leadership teleconference.
I think there's talk about having, you know, more president's calls. And so, yeah, so I think that there's interest in doing that. Yeah.
Okay, that's me here. My idea has to do more, I guess, with advocacy for access and the process of how to going about when there is an issue in a community. And maybe, I mean, I've been involved with structured negotiations and things, and I think the biggest benefit is something changes for the better for the blind. And as leadership roles here, you know, how do we go and where do we go and how do we go about it?
Right. How to advocate. That would be so helpful, I think. Yes. You know, and the nuts and bolts of it, like, you know, how do you write this letter? What's the format of the letter? Who is the person you should write it to? And if you don't know who it is, who do you ask to find out who the person is that you write to? Right.
I'll tell you about the issue. Mm-hmm. We had a fruit market on Van Buren, and this guy couldn't get his wheelchair up the ramp to the fruit stand. ADA, he got a hold of ADA, and ADA closed him down. Uh-huh. And now they told him he can no longer have that business, so right now another business just bought out his business.
Because he went straight to ADA.
Sometimes you hope there's something that can be done before that.
Yeah, what might have been a more constructive way of doing something like that, yeah. Okay, did I get everybody on the right side here?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let me go on the other side here. Ideas for next year's conference. Did I go too far? I did go too far. Here we are. Yep.
All right, right here.
Here we are.
Yay! I thought you were, like, finding somebody in the corner. I'm just kidding. All right, so if you're going to add in, articles of incorporation and 501c3 status, why wouldn't we maybe talk about strategic plan, what it is, how to do it, how to implement it?
Sure.
Yeah?
Planning.
Yeah. I'm passing it to Kelly. Okay. There you go, Kelly. Where's your hands?
I think I have a question about 501c3. I know people in our chapter have talked about possibly applying for their own 501c3, and I suppose it might make things easier for folks on the state level, but why is there a push towards that for individual chapters? Because it seems like we might lose continuity if you have a bunch of nonprofit organizations. Right now, we're all under the umbrella of the CCB, which is under the umbrella of the ACB. But if you get your own 501c3 status, then you're your own entity. What's the advantage?
That's a good question, because frankly, I'm involved with a couple of chapters that are working towards that. And the reason we're doing it is because we do want more autonomy. We're not trying to break away from CCB or anything, but it's more something where it gives us more of a firm presence in the community, especially a legal presence in terms of, you know, that because right now, for example, CCB is very flexible with chapters in terms of their fundraising, but technically the CCB is responsible for that. So the reason that you need to send in your fundraising report every year to CCB is because as far as the 501c3 status is concerned, you're a part of that corporate entity, the CCB, which makes them accountable to the government for what you do. And obviously, since they're accountable, they need to have some say about it. And where if you get your own autonomy, then you're the one who has the say. And it's less important that they don't need to tell you how to run your fundraising or when not to do something for fundraising, because you're on your own. It is. There are specific rules. And also, very importantly, too, is that, you know, it's not a trivial matter to do a 501c3, because, I mean, the advantage, of course, is that you have more autonomy. You have people who donate to you can claim deductions because you're registered as a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. But you have a lot more reporting requirements to the government, you know, because then you are accountable to the government for what your organization does. And that's going to be a whole lot more reporting, more complicated than the report that you send into Ed every year. So it's a balance, you know. So, for example, in the case of the groups I'm involved with, we know why we're doing it and we understand it, but it may not be appropriate for every group, and so I think each situation is different. So other ideas that you have? Oh, okay. Right. Where am I? I'm going to the third table. And the next table. After Phil? Okay. Oh, you don't have any ideas? for next year?
I'll probably think of them after we adjourn.
There you go. You know where to find me.
I know your address, right?
You know where I live, yes.
I think that applies to all of us, Frank.
Yeah, okay.
And I wanted to thank you for such an excellent afternoon to begin with. Really very, very helpful. I'd like to see a little bit of emphasis on coalition building and networking among organizations as well as among people. We have some people that sort of seem either other organizations are foreign countries or mortal enemies or, you know, something in between. And what works with individuals, I'm sure, could work on a larger coalition basis without anybody having to, you know, surrender or anything. It just could be more, because unfortunately there's, again, with personalities, there's some hard feelings between standing members of organizations, all of which have the same goal, and I'm sure they do.
You're saying that's a problem with young people, getting young people.
We talked, Amanda and I talked to a young lady last year. She was maybe 20, 21 years old. And she came to one of the conventions last year. And we were talking to her on the way home. And she was like, I don't understand why there has to be all this politics. I don't understand why there's two organizations for the blind and they're separate. And she said, you know, I don't need to go to an advocacy organization. When I needed a traffic light on my campus, I went and I talked to some people about how to do it. And I went and I got it done. And I have the light now. And I don't need to join an organization to get that thing to happen. And I don't want to be a part of all the politics. And I don't want to have all that conflict. And people don't understand the history. Some of the things that happened between organizations have happened so long ago that a lot of people don't even want to think about it. And I think you're right. It's important to network with organizations. Right, exactly. And I think one of the things that we need in the toolkit is just a little fact sheet of some of the things that CCB has accomplished.
Yes, that's great.
And I think what you need probably is some success stories where CCB has worked in the past and also some current things, because I think, I'll admit, when I was probably in my 20s, I probably would have said similar things to what that lady said. Hey, man, I mean, I get all my books in Braille. Everything's cool. And I'm just trying to get through school. I don't need this. But somehow when you get in your 30s and you see the world, there's kind of a need of being involved in the blind community, I think. And also the world isn't as rosy as it was. And so there seems to be a need. So sometimes I think age plays a difference. And I think also, too, that's a good tact to use with someone. You know, you were so successful, other people need to hear how you were successful. So you can inspire other people. And I think sometimes we forget that we, our success stories do inspire.
Here you go, Frank.
Yep, yep. That's right. The reason she was able to go to some people at her campus and ask them to put in an accessible signal, and they did it, is because around the country, the hundreds and thousands of people were pounding on doors saying, you need to make this possible. And because of that, those campuses had the infrastructure in place so that somebody could come to them and ask for a signal. Yep, exactly. So has everybody even heard about things that you'd like to see in next year's leadership track? I think we do. I think we've got some great ideas. I'm looking forward to being with you this coming year. Again, I'm going to work hard as quickly as I can to get the first edition of the toolbox out to everybody. And I thank you very much for your contributions. I think the best thing about this leadership track is to bring us together to share our ideas with each other. That's the absolutely the best and most powerful part of the whole thing. Because otherwise, if it was just one way, you could just read a book, right? So thank you for there you go. Yeah, well, so thank you for attending with us this afternoon. You had choices. You chose this. You know, you didn't get to hear about your self talk. You didn't get to hear about employment, but you stayed here, and I appreciate that. And I hope you're all having a great convention. I have been. And so I hope you have a great rest of the weekend. Thank you very much.